I was actually a victim of bias in workplace. So I was demoted from my position as a senior product manager because I had given birth to a baby, and my manager thought I should spend lower grade responsibilities. I should spend more time with my family and not at my work to propel my career. So that's how I was demoted. So that's when my first, I would say knock on the head happened, and I decided, chuck it. If this is how corporate world is going to treat me, I'm not going to be there in the corporate world itself.
Welcome to the Psych and Success Podcast, your favorite voice of business psychology. I am your host, Kritika Kashyap, a management psychologist. So today, I am super excited to have Srijita Bhatnagar with us. She is a setback leadership champion who is turning the idea of setbacks. She has a knack for guiding leaders and organizations to see the hidden opportunity in challenges. We are diving into how different generations tackle workplace hurdles and the secret sauce of bouncing back stronger from setbacks. Srijita's journey is as inspiring and as enlightening from the corporate world to entrepreneurship. If you have ever faced a challenge and wondered, what now? This is your episode for you. Let's get started and uncover some game-changing insights.
Hi, Sri. Welcome to the podcast, Psych and Success.
Hi, Kritika. How are you doing? Long time no see.
Yes, it has been quite a very long time. And I am just so glad that you're here today on the podcast with me, because I remember we had met bunch of years back in a speaker summit, and you were talking about setbacks and leadership and resilience. So at that moment, I registered what you were talking about, but then I was not really able to resonate or understand exactly what you were talking. And in the past 2 years, I think there have been ups and downs, and that is when I think last month I saw one of your posts on LinkedIn, and I was like, why am I not connecting to you? So that is why I just reconnected and we talked, and I loved it, and you're here and I'm so happy.
Thank you. Yeah, we met just before the pandemic in 20.
Right.
Yeah, the world closed immediately after our meeting. I mean, we didn't have anything to do with, it's a sounds so cool.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a thing.
I know.
And by the way, you just pointed out that we are twinning as well.
Yes, we are. That's right. Great minds think alike. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Just saying, it's a saying. You see that?
Yep. I totally get it. So, coming back, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
So, my name is Srijita Bhatnagar. My name itself is a mouthful.
I saw your LinkedIn post like right now when you were struggling to make somebody else pronounce your name, and you had your own little fun.
Oh, yeah. So my name itself is... I come from India, so we believe in giving names that can break your teeth sound.
It's always a tongue twister for the Western people.
Yes. So we feel you. We definitely feel you, Kritika, and my name. Both our names are a little complicated to pronounce. So again, my name is Srijita Bhatnagar, and you can call me Sri, like Kritika, just call me. I have been in the speaking, coaching and consulting world since 2017, working on a topic called setback leadership, which is essentially the art and science of how to leverage challenges for growth and success. The general tendency of people is to see challenges, see failures, see setbacks as a bummer, as something that should be avoided at any cost. Whereas I believe that you should actually embrace challenges. Because when you do, you actually open a lot of doors for growth and success. So that's what I do. I am a speaker, coach, and a consultant, and I speak on this particular topic. I work with mostly corporate leaders and women leaders who are facing certain kind of challenges in their corporate careers or organizations, and I help them leverage those same challenges for success, growth for the organization and for themselves.
That's so good. And I would love to know, because I know that you had been working as project manager before that. What was it that, you know, changed your perspective and that made you change your career altogether and get into setback leadership?
I've had three completely different careers.
Yeah.
In my 20 plus years of corporate experience or work experience, let's say. So I've worked in multinational organizations, and I was their product manager, senior product managers, handling different kinds of challenges. And product managers are supposed to be the punching bags of corporate organizations.
I'm sure the product manager. You have been punched a lot, or you have been punching a lot.
Yes. The technology blames you for not giving them the right specs. Okay, the sales gives you not giving them the product at the right time.
Oh,
marketing. You suck and the product sucks. So, you know, it's all product manager's fault. So I have been in that space handling multicultural, multidimensional teams in different ways and kind of balancing out. That was my first career. Then I kind of had an introspection year, and also a challenge that hit me my way. I was actually a victim of bias in workplace.
And bias?
Yes, bias in workplace. So I was demoted from my position as a senior product manager because I had given birth to a baby, and my manager thought I should spend lower grade responsibilities. I should spend more time with my family and not at my work to propel my career. So that's how I was demoted. So that's when my first, I would say knock on the head happened, and I decided, chuck it. If this is how corporate world is going to treat me, I'm not going to be there in the corporate world itself. So I quit the corporate world, and I got into entrepreneurship.
Okay.
My first company in 2013, and being a first generation entrepreneur, Can I say screwed it up?
No, yes. That's okay. That word is fine.
I completely blotched it up. Let's use a better word here, right? I did a lot of mistakes. I learned a lot of costly lessons, lost a lot of money, but in that process, really learned a lot of lessons during that period of time. And then I closed down my first company because it was not doing well. And then
Can I ask you, what was that company into? What were you trying to?
It was into, rural arts and crafts. Taking rural arts and crafts from India to the global audience, to the urban audience in India and outside. So that was it. It was about. So I used to do a lot of work around going into rural arts and crafts villages with artisans and understand their craft and know why they do what they do and how to do it. And what's the specificity about it? It was a fast time, honestly. I learned a lot about Indian rural crafts and arts and how that can be translated into something exquisite for the world and everything. But interestingly, it did not pick up at that point in time. I think I was early in the
marketing,
right? Yeah. Time to be right for you to write with.
Because that sounds very interesting. And second, that there is a market, but I'm sure that you would have tried everything that you could possible at that moment. But it must be early for you, because 2013 to 2014, the global village was not as small as a village as it is now.
Correct. That's what I said. I was probably early in the space, right? So That's why I, and also being a first generation entrepreneur, I did a lot of rookie mistakes. I'll be honest with that. I mean, there's nothing to hide here. There is no pride here to hide your mistakes, right?
Yeah.
So, and because of that, we lost a lot of money and we were not able to, you know, turn it around. So it sort of happened around the same time I got selected for an IIM course, IIM Bangalore course, Indian Institute of Management, Bangalore. And during that entrepreneurship course, my mentor told me that if this is not working, then you should probably pivot to something. And that's when I looked into another thing. And the idea of my second company actually came in my mind. And this was because I had about 30 other girls, other women in the in that entrepreneurship course cohort. Yeah. And one of us had one big challenge.
Right.
Where do we find proper professional clothes, which are not too westernized, which can kind of complement our style and create a unique persona about ourselves. So that was the challenge that kind of intrigued me. And I realized it was not only my problem. I find it very difficult to find, you know, professional clothes. So even today, I get them tailor-made because, I don't find them on the shops or in the shops that easily. Either they're too flimsy or they don't fit correctly. It fits here, it doesn't fit there. And
yeah,
problem happens. And I mean, when it comes to professional space, because I'm a speaker, a trainer, coach, and a consultant, I have to be absolutely comfortable in my skin, you know, whenever I'm doing stuff. So that was the challenge that we were facing. And so then my second company started, my second startup started. It was around, how do you use tech? And in today's word, AI, to realize, you know, creating a persona for somebody's style sense and then create clothes that will implement them. So this was, again, I think, ahead of time.
Yeah, to it. Definitely. I mean, if I even think about 5-7 years back in time, now if we talk about that, people would be, it's a bang on idea. And a lot of people have already been working on it, but still, like...
But yeah, honestly, it actually took a good ride, honestly. I started it in around 2015 and I took it until about 2020. It was doing pretty well. But then in 2020, during the pandemic, it kind of died its own natural death. And, you know, I was also getting more and more glued into working on my speaking, coaching and consulting business. In late 2019, I launched my first book. So it naturally became my first priority and this kind of died its natural death, let's say. So yeah, so the third career, as I was talking about, the first one was corporate career, the second one was startup. And my third career, which I've been working on since 2017, along with my startup, been speaking, coaching, and consulting. So yeah, currently I'm in my third career, enjoying, happy.
That's so good, because I see, like, there were setbacks after setbacks after setbacks, which actually brought you to working in setbacks and helping other people through your own journey, through your own experiences, and how they can be better and they can be more resilient through those and embrace it, as you say. Because working with different people, different leaders in different industries, and even looking at different generations, have you seen any, you know, common themes or common challenges or setbacks that people come to you with and you help them?
Yes. See, no matter the caste, creed, gender, age, or location of you, the basic needs are same. You know, we are in an age where we want to self-actualize. Our problem is not food, shelter,
the basic needs.
Basic needs, necessities, right? Our right, currently, all of our generation's main need is to be relevant, have a purposeful life, and contribute in a manner that makes you feel good about yourself. So when you're trying to do that, it's a challenging thing to do it. Finding a purpose is not easy. It takes time, takes a lot of deliberation. It takes a lot of mistakes. Us been there, done that.
Yeah, I totally resonate with you. I'm kind of walking the same path.
Yeah, so therefore challenges will be there. And most of the challenges are similar. It's like, how do I find a purpose? How do I make sure that what I'm saying, what I'm doing is making sense to the rest of the world? How do I make sure that my employer understands my needs, or my employer understands my talent? Like my employer, when I was in corporate, they did not understand my talent. They took a situation against me. You know, had they not demoted me, I wouldn't be here. But had they not demoted me, I would have probably gone ahead and created history in that organization. Who knows, right? So that's what it is. So their challenges are that it's most like, okay, how do I be more relevant to everybody around me and make sure that they understand what I'm going through or what I am actually requiring as a leader? So I would say it doesn't really matter which age, which creed, which location, which generation you belong to. Generic challenges are same.
Interesting. So if you talk about, because I know that you mostly work with leaders, so leaders would definitely, the relevance I understand with leaders and with the managers or the lower level employees, but how is it different from, if you would, you know, put some light on, if let's say even millennials who are in mid-senior level right now, how is their challenge different from the leader's challenge at the moment?
Yeah, so, okay. While we say that, yes, generic challenges are similar for everyone when it comes to, let's say, the personal challenges, right? The personal of somebody, personal growth needs. But when it comes to dealing with people, millennials are very different from Gen Zs.
Okay, how is that?
Or baby boomers are very different from Gen Zs. Okay, so let me give you an example. For baby boomers, or even for millennials, or Gen X, where I fall in, right? I mean, I come from Gen X, so I call myself the bridge generation. The generation that bridges between the Gen Zs with the baby boomers and the previous generation, right?
Yeah.
Lot of responsibilities on me.
Oh, the shoulders, yeah.
Having said that, as I said, so currently we are in a corporate setup where there are multi-generational workforce working together.
Yep.
And even though the challenges are very similar from a personal point of view, the values, the ethics, and the belief systems are very different.
Okay.
And because the values, belief systems, and the ethics are very different for, let's say, a baby boomer or a Gen X or a versus a Gen Y or a Gen Z or even millennials, right? So that's where the clash kind of happened. For a baby boomer or I don't care about somebody calling me ma'am or sir, but then baby boomers are very, very particular about respect, you know?
Yeah.
And they demand respect. And Gen Zs, they cannot work with demanding situations.
True.
You need to command it. You know, you need to really bring up yourself in front of them so that they respect you automatically and not that you have to say, hey, you have to respect me.
To gain Gen Z's respect.
Yeah, because it's not because they are, let's say, obnoxious, or they're not, let's say, snotty, or they're not like, you know, they don't care. They do care. What do they care? They care about skills, not age. They care about how capable are you, not your age. In today's world, experience doesn't equate to age.
Yep.
Experience is experience. It has nothing to do with age. And Gen Z understands that baby boomers are still catching up.
Yeah, that is so true, because even in my the companies that I have worked in previously. So in one of the, I was working in one startup, and because I knew, like, when you have a senior, you say, ma'am or sir. And my CEO, I was working directly with the CEO, and she told me that you do not need to say ma'am to me. Just take my name. And I was really impressed by that. And that is something that, you know, I learned and I took it forward. But then the next company that I went to, there was a culture of ma'am and sir. And that was so difficult for me to, and I was questioning that, why do I need to address you as ma'am or sir? And where, you know, I am doing the work that is there and I'm doing my best. I have this kind of skill set, and you have your own work. You have your own skill set. So why is there a disparity between us?
That's how it is. I mean, I am with the Gen Zs in this case. I always believe that you command respect. You cannot demand respect.
Yeah.
Whoever you are.
Because I also think that baby boomers and even Gen X come, they have seen a lot of authority. Like, leadership has to be authoritarian. And whereas Gen Z and even millennials, that they have seen either transformational leadership or the servant leadership, that is now, like, leaders are trying to get into.
Yeah.
And how do you then help those leaders? What are your tricks and secrets that help them be relevant and also cope up with the fast changing things that are happening around the corporate world at the moment?
Yes. I mean, as I said, a lot of responsibilities on each person.
Yeah.
Simple word here is bridge, you know? And why I say that is because it sounds too simplified, but it is not, you know? It might be simple, but it's not, you know? Bridging gaps, which are really, really broad and deep, it's difficult from a point of view of execution. But as long as we acknowledge it, you know, as a corporate community and as an organization, that yes, there is a gap that is there and we need to bridge the gap, it becomes easier then, because you know that you need to do it. Then it is all about doing the right things to go about, you know, bridging those gaps. So tools, tips, etc. As I said, first thing is bridging. Bridge needs to be created, which is to make understand both the generations in the right manner. I've seen many a times, you know, baby boomers discounting on Gen Zs or millennials, saying that, you know, these kids don't know anything. They're like, talk air.
I've heard that a lot.
I have faced it, you know.
Okay.
I have faced it myself, even though I am not a
millennial or Gen Z.
Gen Z, I'm a Gen X. God damn it! I mean, still it from baby boomers, because, you know, I'm talking about a setup, executive board meeting setup, and one of the executive board members,
right,
and sitting there, and I'm trying to make a point there. And in the group, there's another person who is 65 plus or 60 plus, whatever his age is. He suddenly gets up, and he just looks at me, points towards me and says, hey, what's your age?
What? It's loud.
It's
like,
what's your age? How does that matter? I'm making a point about something here, something serious going on here. Why are you suddenly asking my age? You must be my daughter's age. It's like, you know, dismissing me completely. I said, maybe I'm your daughter's age, but I've got experience in the stuff that I'm talking about. So please let me complete and then you talk. So, you know, I had to kind of put it through. I had to shove it on him. That's the kind of challenge that even millennials and Gen Zs face when they come from a real experience. So when it comes to new technologies, you have to shut up and listen to Gen Z and, you know, and millennials. They know it better than you, no matter what you say. If you say, oh, no, you guys don't know, we did this, we did that, we come from manufacturing and we did big machine related, you know, technology and this, that, what kind of technology is this and all that. Then you're not going to get respect from them, number one. And it's not going to create the bridge. It's going to break the bridge, break the link between. So it's always important to understand that, one, if you truly want to create that bridge, you have to be empathetic towards others. Just because Gen Z likes working from home doesn't mean they're lazy.
Yeah.
They're more productive because they don't want unnecessarily waste time in traveling and driving and, you know, getting breaks after breaks in between and so on and so forth, right? So those are some of the things that the baby boomers can learn from Gen Z and millennials. Now, can Gen Z and millennials learn from baby boomers? It's discipline. It's focus. It's the resilience that the baby boomers bring in. It's true that baby boomers have faced more challenges, different difficult challenges that the Gen Z millennials have never faced in their career, in their life. They've had a much easier, let's say, childhood or a growing up years versus a baby boomer. So they must shut up and listen when they're talking about resilience, focus, purpose, and blend. So it's a give and take. And as I said, it's a right bridge that you should bring in.
Yeah. I mean, I am completely with you on that. However, so when you talk about resilience and baby boomers and Gen X going through altogether different sort of, you know, when they were growing up and when they were actually working the corporates, their environment were different, their situations were different. However, do you not think that the older generations have faced a different kind of challenges, and the newer generations have faced a different kind of challenges? So be it, you know, in the when the social media came in and it has been growing so tremendously, they have a complete different sort of need of being anxious and being feeling out of place, and the older generation have faced a completely different sort of, you know, authoritative leadership and being more focused, being more disciplined. So what is your take on that?
You're right. I'm not saying that Gen Z and millennials have not faced any challenges at all. All I'm saying is that, yes, the challenges have been different. So if I have to put it in simple words, let's say baby boomers have faced challenges which were more towards, this was, I would call them scarcity challenge. They had to make do with less always, you know, whether it is resources, whether it is money, whether it is opportunities, whether it is growth, whatever it is, they had to do with less.
Yeah, true.
That's a very different kind of challenge versus what Gen Z and millennials have faced is the problem of abundance. While I say abundance, whether it is social media abundance, the scrolling abundance, the information abundance, the opportunity abundance. So it's a lot of chatter. It's a lot of chatter to constantly be in focus. So that creates the anxiousness. When you are having too many things to deal with, your mind bonkers, right? And when your mind gets bonkers, you can't really think straight. So that's what has been the problem of Gen Z and millennials. Whereas baby boomers, for them, it was more about how do I, optimize a less or scarce resource that I have or a scarce opportunity that I have, and how do I go after it? So it's a, I would say it's a, if we really think about it, right, it's a fitting puzzle. And if we decide to really be empathetic towards each other, trust me, we can create brilliant workplaces that thrives.
That is so true, and that is so beautiful that you mentioned. And I have never like really thought about it, even after all my research talking to people, that both the different generation blend in together so well if they would be willing to, because they have so much to give to each other, and how then the companies will progress.
And what about AI coming in, technology coming in? Have you seen, because you started in 2017 specifically, and since then COVID happened and then AI came after, have you seen a change in the setbacks that people have been talking about and building resilience on that?
Yes, absolutely. Even though the generic, sentiment around challenge is pretty much the same, it has not changed much. I wish it did post-COVID. It did for a bit. It just, like a spike, it went down and again, went up and then went down again. And back.
So what was the change like?
So when it changed, people became more aware and more, careful about how they invest their time, where they invest their time, how, and how they really take life along with work. We talked about a lot of work-life balance pre-pandemic, but during pandemic and post-pandemic, and immediately after post-pandemic, it became more about work-life integration, which is what I personally believe in, work-life integration. I'm right now sitting in my home in my pajamas, but still, we are talking, right? I mean, I don't
know
that, but...
we are suited up, at least on the upper part.
The top portion, have you seen?
Yeah.
Exactly dressed up like that, both of us.
Yep, I mean, I am.
So, coming back to how it happened, right? So, in the beginning, after the pandemic was kind of over and things started getting back to normal, though companies realized that... the hustling culture, the always running culture, always running after something culture is not really working, and we needed change. But at the same time, they say old habits die hard, right? It takes time for old habits to go away.
Yeah.
So they did try to bring back all the workforces back to office. And of course, many of them retorted, many of them gave in, many of them said, okay, fine. We need to get back to office. It is important for in-person meetings and those connections form only in such situations and so on.
Yes.
However, I am now seeing many big companies slowly changing the hustling culture. They are believing in productivity rather than time spent in work, at work, or how many hours are they working in the work, at work or at their job, as long as the productivity is okay, as long as the work gets done. So, for example, recently I was just reading about Apple changing their work culture from being a notoriously hustling culture to someone who's integrated work and home and life together. So that's a good, I would say, welcoming change to see. But I still feel that a lot more companies can look at that way and change good.
Right. Because I was listening to some researcher, a veteran. So she was talking about that how even the interior of the offices have been changing to more than just cabins and offices, like to more of, where people can collaborate and people can have just working meetings. And that has been the game changer. And that is what the future also holds. If you talk about office spaces and people are working at home, people are working in the office, and even the infrastructure is changing accordingly that we are talking about.
Yes. In fact, I remember back in 2010-11, I was working with ESPN at that point in time, and we had some kind of collaboration with Thoughtworks, if I remember it right. And when we went to their office, we were pleasantly surprised because they had a completely no cabin, completely open office at that time.
Wow.
They were in the space.
They were ahead of their time too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was beautiful, the way the work was happening, the way people were collaborating with each other, etc. So I do believe that it is more than high time now that, companies really believe in the flourishing culture where people can really flourish in whatever they're doing. They should bring this kind of office infrastructure and open it up for everyone.
Because, so in my own research that I was doing, so people, especially in the UK, I was interviewing a lot of professionals. They mentioned that definitely they want a hybrid after COVID. They want a hybrid setup where they know that it is important to collaborate and meet and have team meetings. But then all the focused work they wanted to do at home because they were not able to work as much as they were able to work at their house, at their spaces, at their home. If it is a in-office job, I might just switch jobs. I might just switch companies. But yeah, coming back to tech and AI and resilience.
Mm-hmm. So that's what. So currently, what is happening is that because of after COVID, we forced to be more resilient, more open about it. But then what you have to understand is that we have not seen this many challenges thrown upon our way in such a short span of time.
True.
Generally, 5 to 10 years is when you get to see big challenges changing the world, right? However, in this case, it has been 2 to 3 years within which we have gone through, let's say, COVID, and now we are going through AI and AI. I was, in fact, in a conference this morning and where they're talking about AI, its challenges, its good, bad, and ugly of AI. And I was excited about the good, bad, and the ugly, all of them, because it brings so much more opportunity to be more creatively doing your work, more productively doing your work, and give you more time to live life, you know, and just not sit in your desk looking at this computer screen and constantly going away doing your work. So that's very exciting. But at the same time, if you're a slow learner, let's say, and if you are someone who doesn't want to give in to the new technologies, who doesn't want to really learn and explore the new technologies, it can become truly, truly difficult. You know?
Right.
And another thing is that it's not only about your own, I would say mentality or intentions, but it is also about, as a company, you know, if you're not able to, if you're such a behemoth that you can't quickly change things in your company to incorporate such new technologies in your world, then it's time for you to seek help.
In your experience, how much have you, because, you know, inculcating technology, changing people, employees' perspective, changing a culture, it takes time. How have you seen people or companies taking it, and how quickly are they able to adapt to such changes? Because the other day I was also reading about, it was transformational deficit, which means that there is way more changes that is happening than people are willing to change. Harvard Business Review article.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it has always been, right? People hate change. That's the general tendency of us humans, right? We do not like change much. We do not like our habits getting changed, our routine getting snapped by things. I mean, I was just telling my husband the other day that I enjoy planning a lot. And if my plan gets, let's say, ruined by something, it kind of irritates me. So it's a normal human tendency. Having said that, the world is changing at much faster rate than we can cooperate with. You know, we can really jump into it. And therefore, we have to really sit up and look at it and tell ourselves that if I don't change now, then I'll be redundant.
True.
You look at past any any examples as such. Big companies that were big at one point in time are and that has been this situation for everything. Like, I mean, if you look at the last 20, 30 years, the companies that were ruling the share market are nowhere close anywhere today, right? And the ruling today are all new age technologies. So what happened? They did not really take ownership of changing when it was knocking at their doors. And when they did not change, and it just broke them. So they're out a way to accept and embrace change.
Yeah. So do you have any, personal stories where the, be it generational difference, that has led to a major learning moment for you?
Yes. So pre-pandemic, I remember in 2018, my mentor telling me that you truly want to make a career out of speaking, coaching, and consulting. You have to be comfortable talking about it. You know, you have to be able to share your opinion, share your thoughts and other things, especially on video, because people would want to see you. And
right.
I would always say, listen, I cannot really talk to the camera. I cannot look into the camera and talk. There is nobody on the other camera. Talk to you.
It's so insane. It is so difficult.
It just didn't come to me naturally. Okay, so I kind of said, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. Not happening. And that's how kind of gone for about a couple of years and managed it somehow.
Okay.
Pandemic happened. It went out of the window. And then my mentor said, okay, what are you going to do now? I said, okay, let me try. So I switched on I created a small studio setup in my India, and I started recording. Initially, I started recording videos, and when I started recording videos, it was painful. It was really, I just couldn't focus on the camera. I couldn't look at people and talk, and not only that, the person who talks so normally, otherwise in a in-person event, was fumbling. Every other time I had to look into my notes and look and then go back and again look at notes and then go back and talk. It was like that.
Yeah, because nobody is responding to what you're saying. Nobody is like, no facial expressions, nothing at all.
Yeah, and that became really, really challenging. Then I said, okay, nothing doing. I have time now. And I have to figure out a way. So I went, I clenched my teeth and I said, okay, I will do five videos. Then I said, okay, I will do 10 videos. So I did 10 videos. Then I said, okay, I will do 15 videos. Let's do 15 videos. Like that, I continued. And it became easier. The more I did it, more it became easier. Initially, I would have to take, let's say, 10 takes for one two-minute video or a one-minute video. It became eventually one take for one two-minute, three-minute long video. So that was a pretty good, transition. And while I was leaving one videos in my computer, I realized, oh my God, this is number 100. I want 100 videos without realizing and without even, really feeling the pain after a point, because it became easier over a period of time. So that's my personal story of embracing change, then doing it, even though it really is difficult at the beginning. The more you do it, the more you practice it, it becomes easier over a period of time.
Yeah, better it gets.
Yeah.
So I think, that is something, being consistent, being focused, being just putting your head down and working on what you are doing. That is, again, something that, you had been talking about, that we can learn from baby boomers and Gen X, who have been, that is the, traits that they bring in the work and the environment that they are in.
Correct.
Okay. So that was quite interesting. And I think, I would actually resonate with you, because I was making a bit a bit of videos. And I used to like spend nights on just recording the video. Because in one of my videos, I could see it was a 4 or 5 minute video. And the sun actually went up. It was nighttime and the sun went up. The background has changed in my video.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I completely get that. So now talking about open communication, and that seems like to be, you know, a pivotal element in what we were talking about, earning respect, and especially the younger generation. How do you guide established leaders in adapting these communication styles to engage effectively with the younger generation, with be it millennials, or millennials is still a bit easier, Gen Z specifically? How do you help them with that?
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes the senior leaders will feel that if I have to really make sense to the Gen Z, we have to use a lot of swear words.
Oh my God.
We have to talk a lot of weird. See, and I said, no, you don't.
What? Why? Why are they building this image?
This is it. There are a lot of misconceptions floating around all over the place, right? So, what instead I generally suggest is that first sit down, have a, you know, really open conversation. Have them speak, listen. Listening is a really underrated skill, which a lot of leaders don't do it properly. They think, but all they're doing is hearing. And they're multitasking when they're hearing. And when they're multitasking and hearing, it's not going anywhere. It's just, this goes off. It just flies off, right? So I think listening is a skill that can be imbibed really, really deeply and well among the senior leaders. And one example that I always quote, in fact, I've written about this in my book number 2 as well, that when you are in a meeting, please do not speak. If you are an executive leader or senior leader, you should not start the conversation.
Okay. Yet,
you see, in any meeting, in any senior meeting, the senior leader starts talking.
And
the moment they start talking, the rest of the team goes quiet.
Right.
They switch off. Because it's the intimidation of power and that stops them from sharing their thought process. Instead, what I suggest a good approach to take is start the meeting with the lowest cadre employee.
Okay.
Ask their opinion. Let's say you have an intern who's just joined. Start with them and then go to the junior manager, then the senior manager, then the VP and so on and so forth. So always make sure as a leader, you listen more than you talk. That will help. That's the number one strategy that I always recommend. Number 2 is once you have listened, then you do what? You introspect. And keeping your ego aside.
Right.
You know, it's important to keep your ego aside because a lot of the senior leaders, whether they are or not, they have it.
Of course, yeah. But
truth bomb here. You have egos even if you think you don't. If you think you don't have ego, know that you surely have ego.
Just to think that, oh, I do not have ego.
Oh, no. So, it's a very, you think that you're doing the right thing, but you're actually not doing the right thing. You think you're doing the right thing. So it's important once you've listened, you've jotted down, you introspect and see where can I get better? What can I do better as a servant leader? Today's world was a big deal, is a big thing. I love the way, the servant leadership thought process, the ethos work around, because it does really put a leader in a position of not power, but in a position of giving, in a position of making, it's like a facilitating space, right? You are facilitating right. everybody's job, that everybody can do their job easily. That's your work as a leader. And I believe in that. You're not here to dictate. You're not a dictator.
That's right.
So once you've listened, make sure that you've introspected where the problem lies in and what solution can you bring in. So that's where it gets really deep. After listening is where it gets really deep about, you know, what problems are there and how to solve this problem. Like a company recently was working with, they have something called an employee voiceover survey. So they basically hear, let's say there's a leader, they hear about the team members who this person is, you know, managing their voice anonymously. They will send out a survey to all the employees pertaining to a leader and ask, what do you think about this leader? And these are all anonymous surveys.
Wow.
Yeah. And the HR looks into that and sees, okay, which leader is actually useful or which leader is actually being in the right space, helping it succeed in whatever they're doing. And based on that, the leader gets evaluated.
That's so good because I have not heard of this before. And just, you know, capturing leaders in their element and then evaluating them is always better than even like the 360 degree feedback that we do and everything.
Yeah. 360 degree also doesn't work much because it's mostly quantitative feedback, not really qualitative feedback, right? And in today's world, it is more about quality than quantity. So therefore, yep. This was a very interesting way that they did it. It gives, it just basically shows a mirror to the leader that, listen, you might not be agreeing to this. So this is what your team thinks you are. And then that kind of hits them. Oh, my God. But otherwise, I keep hearing from leaders saying that, hey, can you solve this problem for my team? My team has this problem. I don't have a problem. My team to be, better at this. I am okay with this. And I go, is that so?
Yep. And even while I was working in the training industry, that was the same scenario, exact same scenario. Employers did not have an idea about what employees exactly wanted.
Yeah.
And have you then now come across like a leader, when you're talking about egos, with a my way or a highway attitude, and how did you crank them or help them out with the situation?
The leader directly who had a my way or highway kind of a situation, because I wouldn't have definitely worked with them if they had that kind of an attitude, because it is important that the leader understands that there is a problem at their end to make a difference. If they don't agree to that, it is difficult to work with them. Nobody can help them. Only God can help them. So one of such leaders that I am becoming more and more aware about is Elon Musk. And in fact, I wrote about his leadership style in LinkedIn sometime back. I wrote about, okay, why you should not be a leader like Elon Musk. And I feel like he's got that typical my way or highway kind of a leadership.
Yeah. And because of him, so many employees are facing such huge challenges.
Yeah. So he is a very, very typical example of it. And because a lot of leaders worship him as a leader, he is a great innovator, no doubt about it. He's a great leader. Probably not. So if you really like Elon Musk, like him for the right reasons. Don't like him for his crazy leadership strategy. Rather, you figure out how is he being so innovative? Wow, how is he coming up with such crazy, interesting ideas, right? So that's more important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my pet peeve. Mm-hmm. Leadership style is something I totally resent.
that is so true, and it has been all over the news of how much you know, employees there have been facing such tremendous issues, and people leaving Twitter more so, and people getting also fired. Like half the company got fired for no reason, and the rest who were there had to take all the responsibility on themselves. When we are talking about innovation and the future, what do you think the future of leadership is heading towards, especially concerning and dealing with setbacks? And are there any like upcoming trends that leaders should be preparing for?
I think the first thing that the leader should be doing is whether they're doing it or not, that's a different question. Some of them are doing it. Most of them are still struggling with it. I feel they need to be better prepared with challenges coming their way. The earlier thought process of leadership has been is that, okay, leaders can never have challenges. They have answers for everything. You know, they must have answers for everything if they truly are leaders. That process, I think, is slowly changing. Now the trend is towards, okay, it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay not to know things, but it is not okay to not seek help. You know, or know something. You don't need to solve everything on your own. You can seek help. You don't have to be someone who's like the Superman or Spider-Man of your company, where you solve all problems for everybody, you know, and you don't even know how to solve your own problem, right? So, that's not how it is supposed to be. So the future trend I see is that one, vulnerability is being seen as a strength nowadays, and more leaders are embracing that. Number two, people are okay with seeking help in places where they don't know how to solve the problem or don't have the answers. Number three, they're trying to become better listeners, and they're keeping themselves ready for upcoming challenges.
That is, like, you just spot on said about how things are changing and how leaders should be prepared. Because when I talk about, because I'm a millennial and I'm just on the verge of millennial and being a Gen Z. So when I look at a leader, I mean, I do not see them as a problem solver, and they're rather being empathetic about what my strengths are, what I am going through, and how my growth actually matters, my development actually matters to the company, to the senior that I'm working with. And seeing that the leader is also a human and not a superhero who would just come rescue everybody is so important, because that is also something that I can inculcate in myself and be the next gen leader. And so I would want you to now talk about, because I know that you have written two books, and what made you write the books, and why don't you talk about that? Why should one read that?
Well, the first book actually happened because I started writing it in sometime 2015, 2016. The idea of the book struck me in around 2015, 2016. And that was when I did one of my first big speeches. I talked about why failures are important to be in our life, and how it can change us as a human being for the good, and how it can help us in our career and personal growth. So that's what I spoke about. So when I spoke about it, I had a really interesting experience initially I wasn't ready to talk about my own failures. I was like, no, not happening. I cannot talk about failures.
That's again the vulnerability part. Should I share? Should I not share? How would people take it?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, no. Yeah, I mean, not really. I was in two minds. But then somehow I got coaxed and convinced about it, and I landed up. And then I spoke about whatever I had to speak about it. the audience reaction was phenomenal. And initially, I thought, okay, I screwed it up. I completely royally made a mess out of myself and everything else. But then when I got off the stage, I could see all of them, about 150, 200 people were there in the room. Each one of them came up to me and they personally shared their transformation because of the speech. Like, you know, it did something in their mind. And
must be goosebump experience.
It was a goosebump experience for me. Unfortunately, I don't have a record of that. That's a different story. How I don't have a record of it. But the experience has been etched in my mind forever, in my mind as such. So when that happened, I realized, oh, there is a huge power in failures, and it's probably more powerful than success. So I started building up this book idea about this. I always wanted to write a book, and this was an idea that was going in my mind. So initially, I wanted to write about my 10 mistakes. So the name of the book was, at that time, 10 Mistakes of My Life. And once I wrote about 30-40% of the book, and I kept wondering, the imposter syndrome kind of caught me, and I was like, who the hell am I? Why should listen to what mistakes in my life? You know, this is nonsense. This is not working out. And I just parked it. I kind of scrapped it. I put it in my car and let it be, and never looked at it. So let it be. Then again, in 2018, I started working on my speaking, coaching and consulting business. And I went back, this idea was interesting. What can we do more about it? So then I kind of moved from there and speak more about the different kind of challenges leaders face throughout their life and career, and how those, each one of them, can be a good idea for them. The more number of challenges, the more better growth and faster growth for them. So the first book, Setback Leadership, that's what it is called, came out in 2019. It came out with stories from different leaders from across the world, from different spaces of life and different phases of life. And they're talking about how a particular challenge stirred them in a direction where they are today so successful.
Okay.
So it precisely has about 9 different challenges that that people face in their different in different phases of their career and life, and how that helped them to grow out of it and grow along with it. So that's what the book is all about. Why should you read this book? Well, if you want to find out if you had a money challenge, how that can, let's say you lost a lot of money and you had a financial challenge, how that can be a huge opportunity for you to grow and succeed. Like that, 9 different kind of challenges are there. So that's the first. Second book happened in 2022. And this book is written for women, specifically women leaders in the corporate, who are facing bias, stereotypes, and glass ceilings in different ways, internally and externally. And what I have written in the book is about different stories, and at the same time, 7 different toolkits that they can use to utilize the same challenges in their favor to grow and succeed, despite those, coming on their way as a roadblock. So that's what it is. This book happened post-pandemic because of my conversations with many leaders who were finding it very difficult to maneuver through the world at that point in time when the work and home had integrated, and so much chaos was there. Everybody was at home. They were working in double shifts, triple shifts, one shift for work, one shift for home, and blah, blah, blah. And they were completely, stressed out. I still have many women stressed out. But then at that point in time, everybody was like seeking help. And this book came as one of those answers for that. So if you are struggling in your workplace with bias, stereotypes, or glass ceilings, you should read.
That's amazing, because that is very relevant and very resonating. Both the books, I would say, that very resonating with not just
the earlier years, but even now and even the coming years, it will be very relevant to the leaders, the upcoming leaders. So, Sri, my last question for you would be, what are you looking forward to? What is Sri Jitals Bhatnagar's future looking like?
Well, see, I don't believe in long-term planning of future.
Okay. Is it anymore or did you never believe in it?
I never believed in long-term future planning, honestly. I mean, who lives in the, you know, in the moment, in the time. And, you know, maximum you will see me planning for a year, year and a half, not more than that. So,
right.
Yeah, next year, I am looking forward to a lot of things. So I generally do this. And if any one of you would want to join me in this, I generally plan my year ahead. So by mid of December, I would have planned for the next whole year, quarter by quarter basis, quarter one, quarter three, quarter four. And I would know, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. This is how I want to do, and so on. So,
right.
So I'm still planning for 2024. But what I'm looking forward to is a year of action, a year of me, a lot of work, whether it is podcast guesting, speaking, coaching, consulting. I am looking at all of that. And I am looking at spreading my wings as a speaker, coach, and consultant in the US and UK and those kind of markets right now, because I'm really, really working hard on that. So, yeah, those are the things that I'm really looking forward to.
That's amazing. And count me in on, you know, mapping out your next year. Sri, it was so, so, so amazing talking to you. So many eye-opening things that I got to know about leaders, about even about millennials, Gen Z, and how they work, how we can bridge the gap between them.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a lovely time. This is something I love doing, you know, conversing with people. And I think livens me up a lot more. So I will be riding on the high rest of the day.
That's amazing, because it's morning for you, isn't it?
It's afternoon. It's about 12 p.m. in the afternoon. So I will be, the day I will be bubbling with energy. That's what is going to happen. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. And I hope that this answers a lot of questions that you got from people. I know you had asked people to ask questions. So I
have
answers, and they got their answers. So, you know, listen to it. Let us know. Let me know how you liked it. Connect with me. I am very active on LinkedIn, and stay connected.
Yeah, so I will be sharing your LinkedIn link on the description, podcast description, and people can reach out to you if you have any more question. You missed the opportunity to ask question from Sri. You can connect to her directly, and she would be more than happy to help you out with your challenges, your setbacks. And this was Sri for you, everybody. And there you have it, another episode of Psych and Success, packed with insights and real-world advice on business psychology, Gen Z, evolving workplace dynamics, culture, AI, and so much more. If you want to stay ahead of the curve and dig deep into the fabric of modern work, you know what to do. Hit that follow button, share this podcast with your network, and drop us a review on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you tune in. Your feedback not only supports us, but also helps us connect with more inquisitive minds like yours. By the way, if you're looking to get in touch with today's guest, I've got you covered. Check out the description for their contact details. And if you feel inspired to chat directly with me about these compelling subjects, you can book a quick call through my Calendly, or shoot me an email. All the links are in the description. This is your host, Kritika Kashyap, reminding you that the future of work is here and it's evolving fast. So let's explore it together. Until next time.